Hello, dreamers. This is Janine.
And Stephanie.
And this is The Course of Course, episode 49. We are inching toward 50. We're going to have a big 50th. I don't know how else is going to evolve, but that's my plan anyway.
Well, somehow, we know champagne is involved.
We're going to do something special for our 50th Course of Course podcast. I do want to start off this one, though, in a timely manner. Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time, a GOAT, G-O-A-T. Everybody's talking about that acronym these days.
What does that mean?
It just means greatest of all time.
Oh, thank you.
So people will say hashtag GOAT. He's awakened, which is awesome. So good for you, Muhammad Ali. I hope you're enjoying the time.
What was that, like bite like a bee, sting like a buzzard or something?
I like the fact that you totally got that perfect. I could not. I don't know. It's something like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Okay.
Dance like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Maybe that was his philosophy of life.
The thing I really like about him and why I wanted to open the podcast on this note is because he was an important figure, certainly in the 60s, when he was basically coming into the boxing world and he became a champion during that time, 60s and 70s. He also was somebody who was very much kind of a proponent of civil rights. He was a very spiritual person. Even, which is weird, though, the dichotomy between a spiritual person but also making a living beating someone up.
Yeah.
It's very strange. But it made me think about all those amazing people. Certainly the 60s was an amazing decade, no matter how you slice it. But that whole thing about Martin Luther King and the concept of quietly resisting, basically saying, you know what, we know that all this horrible stuff is happening in our ecosystem, and we need to, one, be calm about it, make a change, but we do it nonviolently. And then I thought, this is such a great and amazing episode in sort of universal forgiveness, because these people had that strength, that fortitude to say, okay, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to take it, but I'm going to bring God into this because we clearly have a purpose here, and that's to somehow right a wrong. But they did it in such an amazing way. We had talked earlier about Martin Luther King being evolved and being transcended. He certainly kind of showed that through demonstration. Muhammad Ali, to me, was part of that ilk. He was somebody that a lot of African Americans really did look up to. A lot of Caucasians looked up to him. To me, he walked his talk, and that was super important. It still is to me. How can we say something and then walk it? So with the course, we're always talking about forgiveness. We want to forgive, but I'm still struggling to walk that talk. I talk it really well. Obviously, I have a microphone in my hand. But being able to say, okay, I'm going to go out into the world today, go into my job, and I'm going to practice forgiveness. I'm not yet there in actually making that manifest, even though I'm trying. But somebody like Muhammad Ali, he did it. Martin Luther King did it. And that's why I'm so impressed with these people, because they actually were able to manifest into the world what they had been saying. How rare is that, unfortunately? It would be great if we could see more of that. And we were talking earlier about the Yahoo discussion group. You had posted on it today, I think in response to somebody, you know, talking about how challenging it is.
It reminded me of my flea episode.
Your flea episode, exactly, which my sister loved. For some reason, she thought was hilarious. I don't know why. When you look at that kind of like discussion group in general, it's just a bunch of students who really are trying earnestly to get through forgiveness.
Yeah.
Which seems so simple in print. Oh, you just forgive. Oh, okay, sure. And then you got to wonder, why is it so difficult? This shouldn't be that difficult. And yes, it totally is, because our ego is so completely in charge when we aren't paying attention.
Right. It's a practice. It's a ongoing effort.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Thank
you. Just remembered
much.
That. Thank you, Muhammad Ali, for putting that into my brain.
We definitely grew up with him, for sure, on the media.
We certainly did. And I feel really privileged that, even though for some of these folks, certainly Martin Luther King, were we even alive by that? I don't even know. But I don't remember. I think he passed away in 64, maybe?
I was going to say 66, 67.
That doesn't sound right. I think it was earlier than that.
Wasn't it around the time one of the Kennedys got shot in California?
RFK?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you're right.
Like within a couple weeks.
You're right. I bow down to your historical knowledge. Yeah, it had to be later.
Something like,
because I remember RFK announcing it. You're right. 67, maybe.
Hmm.
Well, anyway, not to give out age, but unfortunately, I wasn't really all that conscious when he was walking the earth. But I'm lucky enough to at least see in news real footage, and certainly from the people who have been around him, how much of a impact he had, mm-hmm. not just on Americans, certainly African Americans, but on this country. He changed things. He changed things in such a strongly passive way, passive resistance, but really looking up to God the entire time.
Did he write about that or do lecture circuit?
About
talking about his life and how he practiced forgiveness?
Well, I don't know if he was obviously stating that,
mm-hmm.
but he was a reverend, and he was in church every... He was Reverend Martin Luther King, so...
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Muhammad Ali.
Oh, no, I don't know too much about him and his life, but I'm certainly going to look into it more,
okay.
because he is so respected by so many people, and, you know, when he woke up yesterday, Twitter really had a lot of amazing things to say about him. I just think, you know, how lucky we all are to have an opportunity to inspire and make people say, you know what? They are somebody that I'd like to emulate.
Yeah, I was going to say living examples.
Living examples, perfect way to put it. And he definitely was. Good on you, Muhammad Ali.
May you rest in peace and be at one.
Isn't that funny? Because I was seeing RIP. RIP's the big thing. Like, RIP, Prince, RIP. It's like, it is so associated to me with, like, scary things and, like,
on
cemeteries.
And
yeah. It's like, rest in peace, of course. He's not really resting anyway. He's just like, hey, I just woke up. What's going on?
Yeah. The mind. May the mind rest in peace.
Correct.
That's how I interpret it.
So I hope if it's not his last lifetime, I hope it's one of the last ones.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is, good on you.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Muhammad Ali. So there's my Muhammad Ali diatribe. So how was your week, by the way?
I feel like I've been transitioning. It's been, you know, really busy. We just are wrapping the movie, just putting like the bow on the package. So we're right at the tail end.
Your movie comes out end of July?
July 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Everyone go to the movie theater July 22nd.
Ice Age Collision Course.
Stephanie needs the money.
I've been working on having willingness. I was having a meditation and I thought, you know, this is supposed to be very simple. All I need to have is a little willingness. And then I was in the kitchen cooking dinner, listening to the audio of Course in Miracles, when it started talking about willingness. So I went and found it. And it said, offer the Holy Spirit only your willingness to remember, for he retains the knowledge of God and of yourself for you, waiting for your acceptance. Give up gladly everything that would stand in the way of your remembering, for God is in your memory. His voice will tell you that you are part of him when you are willing to remember him and know your own reality again. Let nothing in this world delay your remembering of him, for in this remembering is the knowledge of yourself. So I've been kind of playing with this whole idea of going back to the beginning when the separation happened and looking for the light within. And even in the darkness when I'm meditating, you know, thinking of the projector and just all the images and the oneness. And I've been trying to do a practice of looking at my Jesus picture and talking to Jesus and then going quiet and letting everything go and having this willingness. And now I feel like I'm starting to get gently guided. Like there's a presence. There's something that's starting to, like I'm starting to get my own version of the class. I feel happy. Like I feel different. I feel a little bit lighter.
I was taking a walk, I don't know, a couple of days ago. I don't even know where I was taking a walk to. Oh, no, it was Memorial Day. I was walking back from the beach. I had just been with my, I don't know, significant other, depending on the day.
Conscious uncoupling.
My conscious uncoupling seems to continue to couple. So anyway, I was walking back and I thought, I am legitimately happy right now. I was at peace with everything. I just felt very grateful for my life and the people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wonder if this like small moment is like what it really feels like.
Mm.
Once you get to the point where you're enlightened, you know, it's like we have these small like, oh, that was really nice. And then we kind of revert back to who we are. Right. But that felt like it. It really did.
That's how I feel when I'm meditating and just being quiet with God and just letting all the thoughts go. I mean, sometimes it's a fantasy thought that's completely pulled me off. I thought I was a pirate and somebody was pulling on my tooth and someone was stomping on my foot. And then all of a sudden that fantasy went away. And I thought, oh, well, maybe that pirate died or who knows what. But there's layers of thinking constantly going on, even when I'm trying to still my thoughts in a meditation.
It's such a challenge when things happen on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a friend who hasn't been working, and, you know, sometimes she got a little panic, which is completely understandable because I would feel that way as well. And it's like reminding her, hey, this doesn't exist. This really isn't happening. Mm-hmm. But it's very challenging when you are in those moments of anxiety to say to somebody, well, it doesn't really happen. Like, I don't want to kind of blow off her legitimate feeling.
Yeah, like I created this.
Right. In the bigger picture, you know, there's no reason for us to get worked up about something because it just doesn't really exist anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, it's kind of like when I have those moments, and honestly, they are really becoming less and less now. And I wonder if it's just because I don't care anymore. Not so much in an apathetic way, but I don't see
you're letting go.
That it matters.
We're undoing the mind.
Right. But when I have those moments, it's like, okay, well, hold on here. If I'm seeing something like she was having this anxiety and me saying, oh, well, don't worry, it doesn't really exist. She still has to go to the grocery store and buy food. So for me, it's like this exercise of understanding it doesn't exist and wanting to like help her get that realization, but also support her in the sense that I can't just say to people, oh, yeah, well, it doesn't exist, so I'll see you later. Mm-hmm. So it's like walking that fine line again between one world and another.
Right.
This fake world that we're in right now that our ego is still so very connected to. And we were talking about how connected the ego is with our daily bodies, like how we exist in nutrition and diet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very hard to like remember, oh no, this doesn't exist. This body doesn't exist, which is what the Course would say. But we still got to feed it and take care of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it still loses weight or gains weight or whatever. And we still have to go through pain. So I can't wait till whenever the lifetime is that I'm be like, whatever.
I think this is it. I think we're working towards that.
I wonder what Ken Wapnick really felt like. Because from all indication, it seemed like he was enlightened in this lifetime, Ken Wapnick lifetime. I wonder, like, did he have worries about his body? Did he bruise or did he hurt himself? Like, how was his body state?
If he was truly enlightened, like it was maybe towards the end or something, then I would think none of it would seem real, like Jesus or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if he was not fully enlightened, then yeah, I would guess that he's more in the world of the false world. Mikey was saying last week, we're either fully enlightened or we're not.
Right. It's kind of like, it's a black and white thing. It's not a gray thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Art and Persa, 100 years in the future, that is their last lifetimes, and they will become enlightened. But I can say that who I am now is light years away from who I was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So I can now start to understand why you can change things in one lifetime. You really can go from a hot mess to, you know what I mean, to maybe enlightened. I don't know if I'm going to get all the way there in the Janine lifetime, but I'm going to work on whatever I can to make sure that if I do come back again, I'm not going to make it as challenging as it was for this lifetime. Because my first 30 years probably were they were not where they needed to be. But I'm glad that the Course came and I was able to like get over that hump and start working on kind of letting things go and transcending or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully Art and Persa 100 years from now, I would love to be their neighbor 100 years from now. I just look at them and go, you know what? If they're coming back 100 years, what makes me think I'm not?
And it's in their script because we know it.
Right. And like, book, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. It's just, all I really care about is focusing on this current Janine experience and what I can do to keep moving closer to God, regardless of whatever the outcome is.
To me, that's building the inner world. For right now, I feel like that's the bridge to enlightenment. And the more I'm in the outside world, it just makes it real. So it's necessary to stop. It's necessary to turn off the false world, go within, and get some guidance. And that's what I feel. Like you were saying, the two worlds, I feel really strong about that. Like I was writing about that in my journal, that right now I feel like there's this false world and then there's this holy world. And at home is my holy world, or when I'm by myself in the car, whatever. But when I'm at work is the not the ego world. Anyways, I was listening to Jackie's 24 Hour with Bruce Rawls, and he was talking about, actually they both were, is that this is a, reminding us the course is a mental process, that this is a thought system, and that we can ask ourselves, what are we identifying with in this moment? Is it love or is it fear? And it's pretty easy, because then you just choose. So he had these three R's. They were called revelation, which is, you know, realizing something's going on. Release, letting go and choosing something else and replacing it with God. It's just giving the illusion over. And that, to me, is the practice. That's the true forgiveness, the quantum forgiveness, whatever. It's just whatever's going on, just constantly keep giving it over, good or bad.
I am finding that my Achilles heel, so to speak, with the course is no longer family issues or personal relationship issues. Mm-hmm. It's definitely still remaining in the workspace. And I do think I've made strides there, but I also will catch myself, and that's the revelation part of it, where I'll have this thought, like, oh, whatever, it's not very nice towards somebody. And I'll have to stop and say that somebody is you. So it's kind of like I'm doing much better at recognizing it, but I'm still working on choosing a different way of seeing it.
Bruce had something really great to say. He was reminding us that everyone in our life is on our theatrical payroll.
Yes. They're all...
We've invented all of them.
Right. They're all cast as actors in our play.
Yeah.
That we wrote.
Yes.
We wrote it. And then we get mad because their acting is exactly as we wrote their role.
He said the dream is like a Warner Brothers movie, an MGM picture with great production values. And so in the movie business, I just really related to that.
Right. Yeah. It's perfect virtual reality.
Yes. The projection, the dream. Yeah. That's not real, but seems real.
You know, it's weird. I have this thing where I love projectors. Literally that physical box that will project an image on the wall. I love them. I don't know what my thing is. Like I had one, although I don't have it anymore because somehow it went away. Mm. I was down at Brookstone, that store that has a bunch of gadget stuff, and I saw a little projector that I can hook on to my iPhone. I thought, I'm just going to get this projector. And I stopped and went, you really need a projector? Why?
To see if it would work.
I just have been fascinated with physical projectors lately.
Maybe that's cool, because maybe that's your way of going back to the beginning and pulling the light bulb out of the projector.
Oh, no.
And then there's darkness. But I feel like in the darkness is the light. I don't know. There's just something going on with me right now.
I know I've been dreaming a lot more lately. I've always been dreaming, but I've been remembering it a lot more. And sometimes my dreams are not pleasant. Like you were saying, you know, some sort of pirate, which is funny. Pirate was pulling out your tooth, which is a little weird. Very creative, though. So I had somebody at my door in my dream, and I opened the door, and it was this woman who said, I'm taking you to jail. And I'm like, well, that's weird. So I was like, well, I'm going to fix this. So I just went back to bed. And I woke up, and I was like, good. Where's breakfast? Like, it's sort of like being more aware, like, this isn't really happening. Uh-huh. Go away.
I guess I would say one tactic that's been working for me, which I think I already kind of mentioned, is the Jesus pictures that Nanette Christ created when he appeared to her. That's on our Facebook page. I have them all over my house, and my eye will kind of catch him and be like, oh yeah, none of this is real. This is just an illusion. Or I sit down and I actually look at it and start talking to it and like unwinding for the day. Or last week I said, you know, it's my barf bag. Like I just let it all out. And I just, the self-talking and the anchoring of the picture, there's something about the light. I always do the Lord's Prayer and the song, this forgotten song prayer from the Course, those two prayers. And there's something about light and music and just everything I just feels coming together.
I think there's going to be another course conference. Mm. This was the Beverly conference that we first went to. That was our first foray. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was the other group. The other group.
And our oneness journey.
Exactly. There's always got to be separation. But I honestly wouldn't mind going back there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's in August, right?
Yeah.
They have that.
August in Irvine.
So I had like a day of fearful thoughts again. Am I going to die? How am I going to die? And I was
brought that on?
I don't know. These things just come and go. Little thoughts are constantly coming and going. In the shower, you know, washing my face, have my eyes closed, again, the darkness. And then I start falling forward, so then I have to open my eyes. And then I thought, okay, I'm not a body. I'm just, you know, free, whatever. But then my mind, my ego mind starts thinking, oh, yeah, so next time when you lose your balance, you're going to open your eyes and you're going to see yourself falling to your death, of which you will be in pain when you hit the ground. And, oh, isn't, you know, a body so glorious kind of thing. And then I'm like, no, none of this is real. Like, the ego is just so trickster and manipulating and constant driving me crazy. And
I think we had talked before about people who have a terminal illness, let's just say, and then they go and let's just say it's cancer and they have chemo and all that kind of stuff. And we're kind of the same belief. Like, why bother? Why would you want to prolong the dream? Just wake up already.
I mean, I know some people do survive with certain types of cancer. So maybe that's worth taking the medicine. But when it's like the bladder, the kidneys, the heart, or the lung, and there's multiple things going on, or it's spread through the whole body, then yeah, why bother?
I just have this fantasy that... You know, if I'm told, oh, yeah, you know, it's terminal or whatever, I'm just going to go and eat as much ice cream as I can. I'm going to enjoy third dimension as much as possible. And then I'm going to wake up.
I'm down with that.
Like, see you, suckers. I'm out of here. I guess we just don't have the same attachment. Some people are very attached. Well, also with my significant other, he doesn't seem to believe in anything. Like, once you die, it goes black and it's over. Right.
Like the end of the stage show.
The end of the stage show.
The lights are out.
It's already done. Which wouldn't be bad, I suppose, if it was like the end, but the end meaning the end with God. But he doesn't have the God component.
Right.
You know, he doesn't believe in God. So it's interesting for me to be with somebody who is completely different in kind of worldview and spirituality and things like that. I have found that it doesn't matter. My early days, I'd be like, well, we just don't share the same things. And, you know, I'm not offended in any way by this.
That's great.
I just find it interesting. And it's okay that we can't talk about it. And I can talk about it with you. I can talk about it with other people. I don't have to talk about it with him.
Yeah, it's like that duality just showing right up. Mm-hmm. He thinks one way, you think another way. Prison, Jackie, we're talking about the theatrical face and the Shakespeare thing and the darkness. Then you come to the light, like the face is usually half black and half white. So it's like we are moving into the light.
Well, it's that ancient allegory of the cave lesson of people who were in the cave didn't realize that they could actually leave the cave where there's light until there was a sliver and somebody said, hey, wait a minute, I can go outside. It's funny how we are so stuck in our belief systems and how we think about things until we get that jolt, like Gurdjieff. You know, you get these shocks and you wake up and you go back to sleep and you wake up again. I think being woken up in the course sense has changed so much, certainly for us. The entire course of our current lifetime has changed, but I also think it was probably in the script.
Yeah.
I think it was in the script in the sense that we're just on playback mode.
Right. And we're waking up. We're waking up in heaven. We're already in heaven. The light's all around us. It's extending through the projector. It's in everyone. It's in everything. And just remembering that light is always there.
Well, it gives more understanding to me about the concept of deja vu. Of course we have deja vu. Mm-hmm. We're just watching a replay.
Or why we can relate to so many different situations and have compassion and feel empathy.
Right.
Because we are all of it. We are one.
We get that sometimes it's challenging when we're in the same play with somebody who doesn't quite get that. But I always think of this mentality as I'm the quarterback of these people at work. I can at least lead by example.
All we can do.
Be who I am. And somebody gave me such a great compliment. Vipula, who is my work friend, sits right next to me. She had said to me the other day, you know, you're the person who always makes me feel better, no matter what. You should be a, what are those things called, like Tony Robbins?
Motivational speaker.
Motivational speaker. And I just started laughing because it's the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard.
That's what we're doing right now.
But I thought, ourselves. That's so sweet. Because I just like, wow. That was a very nice compliment.
That is, to be seen, to be known, to be loved.
Well, we had talked before about making sure when you communicate to somebody, you're more conscious about how it lands with them and being very careful, because it's very easy, I think, to say stuff not really realizing it might hurt somebody and have it hurt them. Mm-hmm. So when I do talk to people at work, for whatever reason, it could just be like, you know, I have people who work for me and sometimes I have to explain to them what you did was wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, don't touch the stove again because you're going to burn your hand. But it's like constantly trying to figure out different ways to say it so they're not put on guard, so they aren't feeling defensive. It's kind of like, okay, well, here's the situation. Let's, you know, making sure I'm not saying you. Mm. I need you to whatever, because it immediately is like, wait a minute. And remembering, it's like, well, maybe moving forward, what we can do.
Yeah,
it's like that constant, you know, remembering when you're dealing with somebody, how you can do it in a way where it doesn't hurt them or doesn't make them feel less.
I think coming at it from the point of view of the Holy Spirit script versus the false world script, then they won't feel attacked.
I think last podcast I was talking about that Tim McGraw country song, mm-hmm. Always Be Humble and Kind. Mm-hmm. So I have it on my ringtone, and I had my phone on my desk. And for whatever reason, I've been getting a lot of calls lately from people who are doing political polls. Mm. You know, the California primaries is Tuesday. Coming up. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, I must be on somebody's list. Well, I'm away from my desk, and apparently my phone just kept ringing. And I must have played, well, the phone must have played Always Be Humble and Kind like 20 times in a row. Mm. And finally somebody walked over to me and said, what is going on? I go, oh, I'm sorry, I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
It's like that was my little to the universe. Hey, you guys, I'm going to remind you every 2 seconds.
That's right.
So everybody got their fill of Tim McGraw.
Be humble and be kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wake up to it now, so.
That's what I'm focusing on, too, now. It's just being gentle to myself, being gentle to my process, being kind, just trying to be love and be peace.
I was walking down. There's a very popular kind of tourist place in Santa Monica. It's called the Third Street Promenade. It's a big shopping kind of center. And I was walking down, and there were so many people down there. You and I walk fast. And so I'm trying to do my thing, but the people ahead of me were like really slow. And you know, they're tourists, so they're just sort of looking around. They're much more kind of leisure walking, and I'm like power walking, right? Yeah.
Know where I'm going, know what I need.
And I had to stop myself because I was really getting upset. You know how it is when you're in the mood of like, I got to keep moving, and these people are like, you know.
Stopping you.
Yeah, it's like a meat wall. And it's like, I've got to keep pushing them. But it's like, I finally was able to say, look, it's okay. What am I doing? It's a Saturday. I have nothing to do. And you're getting mad at these people because they happen to be looking around? Ridiculous.
Ah, the ego is constantly messing with us. Constantly.
All the time.
And those are the opportunities to just keep giving them over.
I think about Gary in those instances because he would always say, just let it go. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's no big deal. When you're somebody who has had this kind of reaction for so long, I have to keep remembering it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I don't do that, I fall back into those old behavior patterns. Like, get out of my way. Why are you moving so slowly? Which is silly.
The ego wants to spin us out with a judgment, with a, you know, making some sense of the situation, which is always a negative sense, a disruptive sense, an agonizing sense.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking in terms of, I know somebody at work who was going through a relationship. They were kind of dating each other. This is not me. Mm-hmm. They kind of, I mean, they're adults, so like in their 40s, I would guess. But they weren't very kind to each other. And so the female in the relationship was saying to the male all the stuff she didn't like about him. Well, you did this and you did that. And I thought, how many times are we in relationships where we tend to focus on that which we don't like about them and not that which we do? How rare is that, that we're with girlfriends and we talk about our boyfriends and we hear each other say, oh, he's so great and he does this and he's amazing and this is what he did today. Maybe once or twice. Mostly it's like, and then he did this. You're not going to believe what he did this time.
Yeah, trying to get agreement on their story.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, having those kind of feelings of love and stuff, it puts us in a very vulnerable position. And it's sort of like our ego kind of doing stuff to cause drama, to cause distraction. So right. we can look at that instead of dealing with our own feelings. Uh-huh. Right? Because when you love somebody, it's really about loving yourself.
Yeah, back to that thing. How am I feeling right now? Am I feeling loving thoughts or am I feeling pretty crappy?
Right. And if they're crappy thoughts, what's the root cause of that?
Yeah. Like, I'm upset. Something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to buy into any of this. I don't even have to figure it out.
Right.
I can just give the whole bloody thing over to the Holy Spirit and just say, you know what? I don't need this unconscious guilt percolating up right now.
Right. But I can say when you're in the midst of a romantic relationship, because there's all these other feelings going on, it becomes a little more challenging because it isn't as pure as, well, I can just give it up. When the person is right there sort of in your face and you're dealing with somebody else too, it's like the dynamic has doubled now.
Crazy train times two.
It is.
Well, at least one's sane and one's insane, but we're both all insane because
we're all insane because we're all asleep.
Right.
And yet we think we're so, oh yeah, well, we're so spiritual, whatever.
We're waking up and it's a process. A few more years to go.
I know. Well, it's okay. It's,
yeah, we'll get there.
Time is irrelevant. It doesn't exist anyway.
Speaking of time.
I know this has been a good talk, I think. We are winding down with episode 49.
Wow, number 50.
50's around the corner.
And we want to welcome all our new listeners from around the world.
Absolutely. For some reason, people are listening to us, which still blows me away.
Peru, India, Pakistan.
The whole world.
Like, all over the place.
I do want to shout out again to my sister who wrote Glimpsing Ileana.
Mm-hmm.
She has a book on Amazon.com. It's Kindle only, so it's a download. It's not yet in a way that you can purchase the physical book, but it's actually really good. So if you want a good read, that's a great one. It's spiritual and it's course related, and she just did a great job with it. So Glimpsing Ileana, everyone, Amazon.com. Thank you very much for hanging there with us, and we will talk to you on the 50th in a few weeks.
Good night.
Good night.